go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running with the final broadcast of the second week of the month of April 2018. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's where you go. If you want to get the live stream, that's where you go. If you want to help keep the program on the air, that's where you go. If you want to become part of the Patreon campaign. And it is, in fact, where you go if you want to join in the madcap multimedia, real-time, wacky, zany extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. If you do jump in there, if you pick yourself out a screen name and a password, you will be met by the likes of Anatole and VP Blom, moderated, of course, by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, oh my God, not only is he a spacing guild master, he is the Kwisatz Haderach. Has folded space to become man cave. Yes. So we now know that about we know that we've learned something about the chat room. Yes. And I'm told by Ben Birch that the White Rose Society stream will probably be back to its usual alive and kicking self as soon as he does some code writing over the weekend. But it's going to take a little time. So there's that. And so here we go. It's 3 minutes past the hour. Of course, at the beginning of every program, even Friday on the front porch, which this is, we have to send out thanks. And in fact, we have one lonely subscriber on the 13th day of the month, and that's Gary out in Oregon. Thank you, Gary. Thank you for being a part of keeping this program on the air. You are, in fact, a partial sponsor of the program tonight. And, indeed, Gary needs subscriber company on the 13th of the month. So if anybody would like to become a subscriber, it would be really wonderful if you did and gave Gary some company. Other thanks go out toward the very end of the program or at slightly after the very end of the program. Last night, Renee in D.C. jumped in, and so I can happily announce that we have $174 to raise to finish this week's broadcasting, a week that no one really expected me to be here, but which saw me here as a result of, you know, the molar from hell. But that's where we are, and hopefully, that $174 that we have yet to raise is not going to translate itself into a $174 deficit for More and Monday, which, of course, will be the 16th of April. Mm-hmm. But no, it's Friday the 13th. I'm not a superstitious person, so we didn't stay home cowering under the divan. No. Agnes and I went out and had an adventure today. And what an adventure it was. As I've mentioned before, the national park here is just dotted with trails. And she and I have decided that we are going to be better at taking advantage of the natural beauty that obtains around here. And so we went out and hiked all the way to the rim of the New River Gorge, the canyon, the so-called Grand Canyon of the East, and then hiked along the rim of the gorge. Spectacular views. Oh, just breathtaking, breathtakingly beautiful. And today was, if yesterday was the most beautiful day of 2018 thus far, today changed that to yesterday was the second most beautiful day of 2018 thus far, because today was nothing short of magnificent. And it got all the way up to something that pale pink little me would refer to as hot. I think I'm going to have to get one of those packs that carry a lot more water than, you know, a simple 16-ounce pint. Because when it starts getting up to, you know, past warm and into hot, hydration becomes a very, very important thing for me. And we didn't set any land speed records for getting around the track today, but we got around the track, and we did so very happily. And you can look on Instagram, on Twitter, and on Facebook. I posted some of the photos. Agnes takes a lot more photos than I do, but I posted some of the photos over on my Facebook page and on Instagram, and something, just a little 30-second video clip that I referred to as 32 Seconds of Hillbilly Zen. It's just a tiny little stream. It's called Fern Creek. And creeks, this wasn't so much a babbling brook. It was more like a, in this spot, a merry little chortling stream. And in the space of hiking along a little further, it went from chortling to an all-out belly laugh as it began rushing down the mountain in search of the New River and a meeting therewith. So it was a, and then to top it all off, wow. Agnes she finished everything off perfectly with an improvised meal of rice done up with a sort of beefy mushroom sauce and ramps, baby, ramps. I got a big bag of ramps. She sort of fried the rice in, yes, Kaneka grease. It was so good. And so I couldn't be any happier if I tried right now. It will be a beautiful night, not a cloud in the sky, and not even Donald J. Trump could take me out of the good mood that I'm in. Now watch the little bastard try. But no, it was a magnificent day. And tomorrow promises to be more of the same. And then spring goes away for a while. By the time you and I are talking again on Monday, I'll be telling you how godforsaken cold it is in the studio. Because while we got up to 87 degrees today, and spring was like, what spring? This is summer. We got up to 87 tomorrow. We'll get up to 82 tomorrow with some partly cloudy skies. The clouds will move in about 11 o'clock this evening. Sunday's thunderstorms and 71. Tomorrow's going to be my first outing with the weed eater. Ha 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 ha. And then Monday, the rains come with a really meat of pieces. 45 is the high on Monday here. We get sunny skies and 57 on Tuesday. And the psychosis of the spring that almost never was continues through all of next week with highs in the 50s, then up into the 60s. And, you know, who freaking knows? So I am of a sunny disposition, and I don't know how. I guess they could try, but I don't know how that's going to be taken away. VT Blom in the chat room says, "What about Andrew McCabe, Bob? He was a naughty boy." Now, I guess that, you know, I don't know. What does that even mean? Disclosure of sensitive information to a reporter and then misled investigators and former FBI Director James Comey about it on several occasions. Apparently, they really brought out the long knives for Andrew McCabe. You know what Andrew McCabe needs? A bowl of Kaneka rice and a nice hike around the gorge and let it all go. No. Those are very serious people. They don't do things like that. More along the lines of, and by the way, we'll get started with Friday on the Front Porch here in fairly short order. And again, you know, we'll have a full 2-hour Friday on the Front Porch. If we could knock down the $174 that we've got to raise this evening before Friday on the Front Porch starts so that I don't have to interrupt the conversation, that would be fan-freaking-tastic. But you know the drill on Friday on the Front Porch. If you've never participated before, then what you need to do is just send a contact request on Skype, because someday, you know, someday we'll get another highfalutin telephone hybrid, and we'll have 6 lines coming in, and that'll mean 4 people on the phones for Friday on the Front Porch. It'll just be awesome. But that's somewhere out in the future and not right now. As it is, if you want to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, you need to send a contact request, if you never have before, on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word, Sparky Dunk on Skype, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail for finding your way over to the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable of extraordinary, ordinary commenters on the news of the week's end. Okie doke. So, what else? Well, something that I have not paid sufficient attention to, and it demands our attention. The ongoing, and you know what's, Steve in New York, dropped me a note saying, "Let's start it off with a $25 challenge." Okay, Steve, thank you very kindly. So that means that if somebody will meet Steve's $25 challenge, we'll have $50 out of the way, and that'll leave us only $149. No, $124. Ciphering. Only $124 to go in fundraising this evening, and that would be awesome in the extreme. What I was saying, though, is that I have not spent nearly enough. I haven't spent any time, because it often there are so many emotions that are wrapped up in this. There's no right way to cover one of these stories, because somebody's going to get mad at you. It was the third straight week of protests in Gaza today. Third straight weekend. there has been slaughter already on the part of the Israeli Defense Forces, the Israeli Army. And today, I guess they're, what, 9 hours in front of us now? So today is now tomorrow there. But today, nearly 1,000 people were injured. Among them, people who were overwhelmed by tear gas. Others, even less fortunate, knocked down by gunfire. Not Palestinian gunfire, as Palestinians protested by massing along the wall, big, beautiful wall that Israel has built to hem in the people of Gaza. Hamas is fronting the protests, but it doesn't matter how many protests they front if people don't come out. This is the halfway point of 6 planned mass demonstrations. They should finish up in mid-May with a commemoration of the 70th anniversary of the founding of Israel and the displacement of millions of Palestinian people. It will also see the start of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Contributing to all of this, of course, it's also connected to the shift of the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, one of the dumbest things that this administration has done. See how that, yeah. Thank you very kindly, John. John just jumped in and knocked down $10 of Steve's challenge. Thank you, John. Thank you very, very kindly. But just, you know, this is one of those things where you have to at least pay attention. 20 Palestinians have been killed during the protests over the last 3 weeks. Killed by the Israeli army. Hundreds upon hundreds have been injured from everything but from gas to bullet wounds. What Gaza winds up being, and it is one of the human rights horrors of the world that somehow manages to get overlooked. Gaza is a 141 square mile open air prison. It has boundaries with Israel and Egypt and the Mediterranean. It is an ancient, ancient land. Pharaohs of Egypt once had steles carved in their honor, steles, noting their triumphs over the city of Gaza. And all of these protests are related to the ongoing demand of the Palestinian people to be able to return, what's called the right of return, to the homes that were taken from them with the institution of the State of Israel. And there's no sign of any progress whatsoever in and certainly there's not going to be any progress under the administration of Pharaoh Fuckwit, you know, Trump. Friday, though, a group from Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, went into the Gaza Strip. They were treating about 100 people with bullet wounds. On the other hand, the health ministry in Gaza says that 300 of the 960 people injured had been hit by gunfire, and a 28-year-old man was killed east of Gaza City. The Israelis killed a journalist who was clearly marked as a journalist. And by way of explanation said, well, we didn't do it on purpose. It's hardly an accident now, is it? Meanwhile, the Israeli army says explosive devices, rocks, and firebombs have continued to be hurled, and several attempts were made to sabotage the security infrastructure. At no point has any Israeli been particularly threatened. People who throw rocks have a hard time hurting people who have tanks and guided missiles. Apparently, the fence has become something of a fetish object. Using loudspeakers, the Israelis have screamed at the Palestinians, "Don't touch the fence. If you touch the fence, we will shoot you." Well, how about that? Summary punishment for fence touching. Just touching. Not shaking, not rattling, not blasting, not gouging, not digging. Just touching. I touched it. Bang! And yet, for some reason or another, we persist in referring to that country as a democracy. Well, I guess democracies do that kind of thing. Oh, well. But I felt like it needed to at least be mentioned while we're up to our eyebrows in bizarre, freakish conduct by the President of the United States. Oh, and by the way, a rumor, speaking of which, a rumor went round and round. Had a note from Renee, by the way, I was talking about the beautiful day here. Renee said, "Glad you and Agnes got to hike the national park in your area and take some new pics. It's a great day here in D.C., too. If anyone's in D.C., over by the Tidal Basin, check out those cherry blossoms." See, that was one of the things that I had on the list for this week. There's not a lot of time for running around and carrying on and fun having, but this is that time of year, and I was pretty well committed to trying to make sure that I saw the cherry blossoms, because they are exquisite when they are in bloom. They are indeed. Thanks for the reminder, Renee. Thank you. Thank you indeed. Back to the filth and sleaze and sordid behavior of anybody who gets anywhere near Donald J. Trump. Apparently, while Michael Cohen only has one or two clients, depending on how you count them, the Trump Organization and Trump, or, you know, Trump is the Trump Organization. He does a little pro bono work on the side. And because Trump is not the only person who goes out there and gets in trouble with his dirty dingus. Michael Cohen apparently did some pro bono work for Elliot Broidy, Broidy. He's been a big time fundraiser for the RNC, the GOP, and in particular for Donald J. Trump. And here's the problem. Today he acknowledged it didn't quite have the panache of a Jimmy Swaggart, but it was the "I have sinned against you" speech. He acknowledged that this is a quote, had a consensual relationship with a woman who wasn't his traditional family values, one man, one woman wife. And along the way, he got her pregnant. Let's see. Progressive Voices, note coming in from Rhonda. Progressive Voices won't connect. We're not on the Progressive Voices stream unless I'm filling in for Malloy. The only way to get it now over at TuneIn, which is where the Progressive Voices stream is, over at TuneIn, you can always get the program by looking for The Horn, T-H-E-H-O-R-N, and that's tied to the head-on.live stream. Let me. Let me just respond because. Just takes a second. There we go. So this is just Yeah, I know. Ron and Raleigh with a note after the mention of what's going on in Gaza. Boy, aren't you glad, subject line. Hey, Bob, I can't tell you how glad I am that Jabba the Trump's son-in-law has got a firm grip on the peace process in the Middle East. Oh, what peace process? They don't want one. No, this will eventually, you know, it may take 300 or 400 or 500 years, but eventually, if Israel survives, it will be because they've been able to say, you know, 500 years from now, what's a Palestinian? And what's his name, Podoritz's statement of years ago that there's no such thing as a Palestinian? Well, that wasn't so much an observation of fact as a wishful prophecy. Genocides don't happen to have to happen to all at once, no. So, no, anyway, back to the sleaze. Elliot Broidy had a consensual relationship with a woman that he caused to become pregnant, issuing a statement, and then Michael Cohen jumped in to set up the payoff for the pregnant woman, with, of course, the typical non-disclosure agreement. It was a $1.6 million settlement. No penny ante paltry $130,000. Maybe that's because there was a fetus involved. But Elliot Broidy was not happy about it. In his statement, he said, "It is unfortunate that this personal matter between two consenting adults is the subject of national discussion just because of Michael Cohen's involvement." And then he resigned as RNC Deputy National Finance Chairman. And apparently this had something to do with all the stuff that the FBI dug out about Dirty Donnie Dingus, in the course of raiding, you know, because this was running around out there. It went along. It went along with an allegation that not only had there been a series of payments to the woman who became pregnant, but that she was compelled to have an abortion. Yeah. By way of explanation, Mr. Broidy said, "Mr. Cohen reached out to me after being contacted by this woman's attorney, Keith Davidson. Although I had not previously hired Mr. Cohen, I retained Mr. Cohen after he informed me about his prior relationship with Mr. Davidson." Who's Keith Davidson? Well, he was Stormy Daniels' first lawyer. Yeah. The one who agreed to the $130,000 hush-up payment. And the woman that Broidy had an affair with was, of course, a Playboy model. What's interesting, though, is the line, and Steve in New York, maybe, or Billable Rick might want to speak to this later. Mr. Cohen reached out to me after being contacted by this woman's attorney, Keith Davidson. So, let's see if we can plot that, map that real quick. Keith Davidson represents the woman, the Playboy model. She's become pregnant, and she's pregnant by a Republican National Committee scumbag who, and her lawyer says, well, if he's a fundraiser for Trump, maybe I should just reach out to Michael Cohen, because Michael Cohen is the fixer for all the sleazy things that Donald Trump does, and maybe therefore he'll want to fix this sleazy thing too. Here's an interesting thing to think about then. Do you suppose since the guy was a deputy finance chair and he raised the real Jed Clampett walking around money for the Trump campaign, do you suppose he discussed the matter with Geezer Disgustus? All we're told in the Washington Post story is that Cohen and Broidy met during the 2016 campaign when Broidy, a California native and major GOP donor, emerged, as if from a chrysalis, as a key financial backer of the RNC. Until Friday, they both served as deputy national finance chairman there. Last month, Broidy co-hosted a fundraiser for Trump's re-election campaign in Los Angeles. So far in this cycle, and here's the first mention of her, Broidy and his wife, who is not the Playboy model, have contributed $614,000 to Republican campaign committees and the RNC itself, according to disclosure records. And why am I including this story? Well, the way that he finagled his way into the Trump campaign and into the RNC is that he gave shit tons of money, and his particular hang-up was the Middle East. Yeah, it all loops in sooner or later. He's one of those guys that was hung up on Qatar. He wanted the United States to take action against Qatar, where we have lots and lots and lots of military personnel and ships and stuff. And he wanted to move against Qatar in favor of the United Arab Emirates and the majestic, serene, high, noble graciousness of the Saudi royal family. In turn, Broidy is connected to a guy named George Nader. George Nader is tied to the Trump campaign as well. George Nader is also a cooperating witness with Robert Mueller and his investigation into Russian interference, you know, meddling in the 2016 election. You know, one of the things that did not happen today while we were out on the trail is we did not walk through any spider webs. I think it was a little too dry for that, maybe. But you know how it is when you're out in the woods and you walk through a spider web and you spend the rest of the day feeling the spider web all over you and just wondering back in the corner of your little mind if little Miss Spider is maybe hovering on that one spot on your back that you can't reach with either of your two primate arms. And it's just waiting to deliver the coup de grace and just bite you. And the clinginess of the spider web feels like it's still on your skin. Well, that's pretty much the same thing as trying to follow which skullduggerous rat fuckers are doing what within the Trump campaign. And so, so in offering his statement, Mr. Broidy said, I'd like to sincerely apologize to my wife and family for the hurt I have caused. Now, that's for those of us who are longtime practitioners of the art of word knowing, that's some there's some bullshit language tucked in there. I'd like to apologize does not mean the same thing as I apologize. It just it manifests an intent to perhaps at some point in the undefined future apologize to his wife and his family for the hurt that he has caused when he was squirming and grunting around on the on that woman that was not his traditional family values, one man and one woman wife. I acknowledge I had a consensual relationship with a Playboy playmate. You know what? That's more bullshit language. That's not apologizing. That's fucking bragging. Yes, that's right. Here I am. There's a photograph of me in the Washington Post. I'm nothing. It goes without saying that I am nothing that a Playboy playmate would ever look at and go, "Ooh, I gotta have that." But you know what? I got shit tons of money. I'm connected to power. I'm connected to Donald Trump, and I got laid by a Playboy playmate. How about that? Yeah, isn't that cool? These people. I acknowledge I had a consensual relationship with a Playboy playmate. At the end of our relationship, this woman shared with me that she was pregnant. She alone decided that she did not want to continue with the pregnancy, and I offered to help her financially during this difficult period, or absence of one, as the case may be. We have not spoken since that time. That's right, the little Jezebel decided to kill her baby by herself. That precious little fetus, I would have raised it as though it were one of my very own, but she killed it. That's some financial help there, 1.6 million smackers, and not even having to raise a youngin' on it. So, God, these people are a scummy lot, aren't they? I mean, I'm 55 years old. There was a time when, you know, I was a you know, young guy who would, you know, we'd head out to the bars and stuff on a Friday night, and, you know, what is now known as hookup culture. And little 20-something, young 20-something women would hook up with young 20-something guys and do things that they probably regretted the next morning. Or not. You know, sometimes you just wound up at the bar of last resort and, nope, I'm going home. And that was the culture in which I lived. You know, everything was consensual and probably went home more often than went home alone more often than I went home with anybody else. But this guy, here's this skeevy dude, and you got to see the picture to really appreciate it. And he's essentially using an entree to power as a means of obtaining sexual gratification. And it's just, that's skeevy. I guess, well, it's kind of like the hike today. It took more effort and energy and more time to do that hike than it would have taken me 30 years ago. 30 years ago, out, up, around, over, across, shoot some pictures, frolic around upon the rocks, and then walk along the ridgeline back out to the parking area, and then a half hour back to the other parking area, or half a mile back to the other parking area, and done. Instead, this one took us about 3.5 hours. We probably moved about a mile an hour. And there was some serious uphill and some serious downdale. And at one point in time, I think my blood sugar probably went down to like 2. And you learn the limitations of your aging body. And I was lucky because I had with me a wonderful woman to whom I will have been married for 25 years as of May the 1st. Lucky indeed. And I've joked all along for almost 30 years now that I keep waking up in the morning and she's still there beside me. And I look at her and go, this is so cool, you're still here. Because I'm kind of amazed, really. You know what, Steve? That's a very trenchant observation. The fraternity of Steve will be glad to lay claim to this for their own. Steve says, is it me, or do Felix Sater and George Nader seem like the Kevin Bacons of the Trump cabal? There's always a Felix Sater or a George Nader connection. Maybe that's why they've become such good, cooperating friends of Robert Mueller III. Maybe. But these dirty old Republicans, I guess they figure as long as you got money, you're getting laid. And maybe just, you know, the thrill's not there for him and Mrs. Broidy anymore. And I'd like to apologize for having sex with a playmate. Yes, look at me. It only cost me $1.6 million in incremental payments. Oh, how manly I am. Yes. Jesus. So, yeah, we got that going for us. Although now he's... You know what? Even though he's not the vice chairman of the Republican National Committee, financial wing, whatever, I bet his check's still cash, and I bet he's still going to be writing them. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh, quote, you have to remember, as Hank Kissinger said, power is the greatest aphrodisiac. I didn't know that it was so powerful that it could serve as a brown paper bag over somebody's head. Namely, Elliot Broidy's. And this is not by way of me saying, ha, look at me, I am a handsome devil, am I not? No, not at all. But Jesus. And then, you know, tucked away in within all of it, is, of course, Michael Cohen, who felt himself to be some sort of, master of the universe, where he could make women with stories to tell disappear with the stroke of a pen. Yes, reminding us about the nature of Qatar. Flavio says, Qatar is only where U.S. CENTCOM is based. If anything happens to the soldiers there, it will be the Carotene Caligula's fault.
What are you talking about? Nothing's ever his fault. Everything's always someone else's fault. That's the way it's been all of his life. It was his parents' fault that he was born.
And, of course, the other thing today that might capture our attention or imagination is the seemingly from out of nowhere pardon of Scooter Libby. Geezer Disgustus said earlier today, said that he was going to pardon him, and then today he did. You may recall that Scooter Libby got himself in hot water for lying about outing an active CIA intelligence agent by the name of Valerie Plame. I well remember the sentencing of Scooter Libby, in which, and it was really kind of disgusting, in which people wrote letters to the judge all about how the mean old judge shouldn't put Dia Scooter in the Grey Bar Hotel. In particular, a letter I recall came from Mary Matalin and James Carville, who wrote, "Our children absolutely adore the man they know as Mr. Scooter, who comes to visit and brings candy and trinkets for the little children. And we implore your honor not to put Mr. Scooter in the prison, for then how shall we explain to our precious little children why Mr. Scooter can't come to visit them anymore?" Oh, it was terrible. It came with the sappy sound of a tinny tinkling whorehouse piano as the well-heeled and powerful of left and right lined up to talk about how poor Mr. Scooter had been unfairly put upon for the simple act of having outed a CIA agent and put at hazard God only knows how many lives. Yields. Well, you can, and it appears at first blush that the pardoning of Scooter Libby comes out of nowhere. That it just seems it seems to be a sort of red herring, but no, Geezer Disgustus never just does things. Scooter Libby is like a sound effect in a Pink Floyd song. It's a symbol of something else. Scooter Libby is a stand-in for a larger idea. When Hamlet reaches into the grave and picks up the skull and says, "Alas, poor Yorick, I knew him well, a man of infinite jest," and continues onward, eulogizing the man who had been the court fool for his father, the prior King Hamlet's court. "Many a day hath he borne me on his shoulders," that sort of thing. Well, contemplating Yorick's mortality is a stand-in for the existential crisis through which Hamlet himself is suffering. And later in the play, he says things like, sleep, perchance to dream, you know, and the whole to be or not to be, that is the question business. That, you know, that whole soliloquy is about him trying to figure out whether he should just off himself. Now, this is not to say that Donald Trump has ever had one moment in his entire miserable, disgusting life in which he's actually given that much thought to the meaning of human existence. That's not what I mean. But Scooter Libby is a symbol. He reached, he and his little cabal of evil elves reached into the mists of time and pulled poor Scooter up from the mists. Donald gave Scooter socks. Scooter is free. Scooter Libby was. Now, toward the end of the Reign of Error, Count Dicula apparently harangued George W. Bush constantly. You gotta pardon poor Scooter there, you know. Hey, he was only trying to help you, George. Really, on the way out the door, George. You gotta pardon Scooter. Scooter's a good man. Scooter served our country. Scooter served you, George. And for once in his life, dim leader apparently looked at Count Dicula and said, "Oh, fuck off, Dick. Give it a rest. It's all you ever talk about anymore. Go have some kid knocked off and get a new heart, why don't you?" But there hasn't been, you know, nobody's been standing in front of the White House every day for the last 9 years with a sign that says, "Pardon poor Mr. Scooter." James Old Serpent Head Carville hasn't been all over cable news talking about how Scooter languishes in misery, awaiting the pardon that has never come for acts that he really, really did that caused real, real harm. But like a corpse that has come loose from its cement shoes at the bottom of the East River, he bobbed to the surface, did Scooter Libby. Bobbed. See what I did there? And the Trumpansies grabbed a hook and dragged him to shore and said, that reminds me of something. Master Donald! Yeah. Well, I'll get to that in a minute, Arthur. And once they got a look at him and they realized who it was, "Well, this reminds me of something. You know what? You know what, Mr. Trump? You need to pardon poor old Scooter. Because you know why? Because it would be like a Western Union telegram that don't exist anymore. And it would be like a Western Union telegram that was delivered right to the very doorstep of Paul Manafort and anybody else that happens to get indicted along the way. Maybe like, you know, your wartime consigliere there, Michael Cohen. That you will use your pardon powers, and all they have to do is keep their mouths shut. And that even if they're found guilty, as long as they stay silent, that they'll know because of what you done did for poor old Mr. Scooter that you'll do the same for them, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, Donald. And you can be like Jesus and forgive them and pardon them and tell them to go on and sin some more. Well, I mean, Jesus said sin no more, but you get the idea. Because, see, Manafort is looking at the business end of the rest of his life in prison. But he still hasn't rolled. He still hasn't turned. He's got to be a wreck. He's got to just be a mess. Or not. As long as that... As long as that knowledge lies in the back of his head, you know, maybe it goes all the way back to before the election.
Paul, I know you're a great campaign strategist, and I just want you to know that whatever you do, I'll always have your back. You know, once you're a friend of Donald, you're always a friend of Donald, and I'll never forget you, especially if I have the pardon power.
Tim Kaine, the hard-charging former vice presidential nominee, said, look, we're in a tough time right now. We're grappling with this Mueller investigation. Even today, the president is announcing that he's going to pardon Scooter Libby. Why pardon Scooter Libby today? People have forgotten about Scooter Libby. The pardoning of somebody who is convicted for obstruction of justice working in the White House, I think, is more about sending a message to people today than it is about a case that's 10 years old. So we're in a very, very challenging time right now. And remember along the way, friends, neighbors, that today the President of the United States referred to a man of upright manner and dignity, Robert Mueller. He's a Republican. I'm not necessarily a fan. But the man has lived a life of moral rectitude. And today on Twitter, not Mueller, but Comey, today on Twitter, Trump called him a slime ball. A slime ball. Go figure. Here's the thing, though. Let's do remember that presidential pardons affect only federal crimes. If, say, for instance, you get a parking ticket in Busted Knuckle, Louisiana, the president cannot pardon your parking ticket. He does not have that power. Meanwhile, if the timeline on the Mueller report has in fact been moved up, it apparently has multiple prongs, sort of like one of those little barbed shrimp and oyster forks. Obstruction of justice includes, within this fact pattern, the intent of Donald Trump to fire Comey, the role that Trump played in helping to write the pathetic tissue of lies on the meeting that his boy, Uday, or Kuday, whichever, took in June 2016 with a bunch of Russians. Then there's the fact that, well, it's described as Trump's dangling of pardons before grand jury witnesses who might testify against him. In other words, the very goddamn thing he did today. And finally, putting pressure on Attorney General of the United States of America, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, to not recuse himself from the Russia investigation, which Sessions had to do. It wasn't a maybe or an iffy call. There was no way not to do it. Then there's the statement that Geezer Disgustus issued upon giving the pardon. In which he made it sound as Trump said straight up,
"I don't know, Mr. Libby, but for many years I've heard that he's been treated unfairly. Hopefully this full pardon will help rectify a very sad portion of his life. Very sad, believe me."
Now bear in mind that at the same time, every day, Donnie jumps up and starts driving nails into his own palms, thinking that a criminal investigation is somehow persecution of him. So we've got a pretty good idea of the direction that this thing is going to take. Someone has told him, "Listen, if you fire Mueller, it's going to be game on. So let Mueller do what he's going to do, and then you just pardon everybody." Well, everybody that keeps the code of Trump Omerta. Is this just way down the rabbit hole? Because it doesn't feel that way to me. Meanwhile, note coming in from Silent R. Lamar. Trump calling someone a slime ball. It takes one to know one. First thing that popped into my mind, too. Darlene in Connecticut says, "Oh, I can figure. When Trump says things like that Comey is an untruthful slime ball, he's really telling the truth for once and talking about himself. It is all psychological projection." Precisely. And meanwhile, I'm providing a bit of a downer to Jim. Jim says, "Oh, shit, Bob, more about your outing, okay?" There's really not much more to tell. I mean, it was surprising to me to see how many trees that still, weren't even budding up to, the hardwoods budding up to put out leaves. I wondered if they were actually dead. Because, again, it's really weird that we didn't get the red buds this year, and I'm bummed out because that's one of the first happy things of spring for me. Ramps and red buds. And who is it? Who was it I had a minute ago? I said, I've got, oh, there it is. Yeah, Kim in New Jersey. Kim and Malin in New Jersey. Subject line, ramp envy. Mouth watering for ramps now. We have an unlimited supply behind our house down the mountain into the woods, about a half-mile walk. Problem is, since Sandy, access through the woods has become nearly impossible due to extensive fallen trees. We have another source, but not walkable from our house. Our ramps are not up yet, but should be soon. Yum. Can't wait for some. We have more in common with Appalachia than many listeners might think in the Garden State, as New Jersey has almost 70 miles of the Appalachian Trail in the hilly northwest corner of the state. I didn't know that. We are not far from there. By the way, our bears were back at the bird feeder last week. Ah, spring, when the bears returned to Kim and Malin's home. Oh, bless their little hearts. The bears. Bless Kim and Malin's heart, too. We should probably talk ramps at some point, because, a lot of people just, they'll season beans with them, which is good. The real trick, though, is to, when you've cleaned and chopped your ramps and everything, saute them in butter or Kaneka grease. And that'll pull a little bit of the sting out of them. But if you can, melt some butter in an iron skillet, saute your ramps, and then pour your scrambled eggs in on top of them, scramble them for a little bit that way, and then at the very end, Just drop in some finely cubed cream cheese. Quit it. With some sourdough toast. All I can say is yum. Yeah. Meanwhile, Steve in New York says, I disagree about Libby. I think this was a message to the Cheney wing of the party, his super far-right base, because I think the only right wing, as we heard from Peter King, said they'd abandon him. Well, that's possible, too, but it sure does sound like a Pink Floyd record being played backward to me, Steve. Maybe it can be both things at the same time. But anyway, we are 6 minutes past the hour. John met $10 of Steve's $25 challenge. That means we've got $15 to go on that. And overall, $174 to end the week. Could we please knock that down? There, I stayed here. I didn't go to D.C., but there are still, you know, the bills, you know, come in. They don't take a holiday. Well, okay. Steve gets a cowbell.
Stop telling us how to cook ramps, Bob.
Yeah, all right. So let's take a break, and then we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Hopefully you'll jump in and join if you feel so compelled. We'd love to have your voice and your thoughts in that group, which is unlike most anything going on anywhere in radio of which I'm aware. So yeah, a little break. Maybe we'll knock down the fundraising thing, and then we'll go to the freewheeling Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable conversation. This is listener supported conversation radio for a Friday the 13th. I'm Bob Kincaid. This seemed appropriate. Thanks, Alexander.
Sailing.
Yeah, courtesy of Alexander, a request. From the horn request line, yeah. That was a very well called bumper there, Bonnie Raitt. And something to talk about. Alexander says, big fan of her and you. Well, I'm a big fan of her, too. I don't know about being a fan of me. It's not like I sing or play an instrument. I can barely play a radio. Wait, that looks fun. Courtesy of Ron and Raleigh. Ramp recipes for the gastronome. Okay, I'll be perusing these over the weekend. Those look special. And, really? How long's The Expanse been back, Ron? I've been itching for something to watch. My God. Last night, Agnes and I sat down, fired up Netflix, and saw that there's a new series called Troy, Fall of a City. I thought, okay, you know, we love that sand and swords and sandals and ancient, you know, mythology. Oh, my God, it was awful. It was terrible. And maybe it's just because classical education is a terrible thing to have. Because I'm sure that they're, you know, in many ways it's the same thing with Altered Carbon. People that never read the book, people who, they're probably fine with it. They're like, oh, Helen, it's so hot. Oh, God, it was dumb. It was achingly stupid. It was horrible. And on top of it, it was dull. I had to watch a little bit of the Brad Pitt version of Troy, which was not great in its own right, just to cleanse the stupid out of my brain from the Netflix series. So all that is a way of saying, thanks, Ron. We've been needing something to watch because the pickings has been slim. So I'll go in search of The Expanse post-haste. Let's run on over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. By the way, we've had an incentive added to the challenge. We got $15 to go on Steve's challenge. Steve wrote in during the break and said, all right, if the next $15 comes from new contributors, if the next $15 comes from a new contributor, Steve's going to throw in $15 on top of that. So, really? $15? 3 at 5, 5 at 3? 1 at 15? Who has never before contributed? And I know there's somebody out there listening who hasn't ever before contributed. And, Steve will throw 15 in on top of it if a newbie throws in that last 15. Yeah, I've watched some of Versailles. Jim said, I sent you an email regarding Versailles on Netflix. Come on. It had some promise, but it didn't just really, really, you know, grab either Agnes or me, although apparently a lot of people were grabbing a lot of other people within the framework of that story. Anyway, over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, where a now Grady-less Sparky moderates the discussion. Hey, Sparky.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm pretty good. I'm sorry to hear Grady went home.
Well, it had to happen sooner or later.
Yeah, and that's a good sign too, because that means everything.
Yeah, he gets to go back hunting, fishing, and riding in the truck again, doing cool dog stuff.
Ah, excellent. He's a mighty good pup.
Well, it's nice country up there. Not too many people.
No, that's thin up that way, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the sparsest populated county in California. There's only 10,000 people in the whole county.
Really? 10,000?
Richmond, 10.
I didn't know there was I didn't know there was anywhere in California that only had 10,000 people in it.
Well, you learned something new today, Modoc County.
Really? I'll be.
It's right up against the border of Oregon and Nevada.
Well, I will be dipped. What's the county seat?
Alturas.
Wow, never even heard.
It's. You ever heard of Captain Jack?
Yeah.
Well, where he held off the army up there in Lava Beds, a national monument or whatever they call it.
Okay, okay. And so, is that the high desert up there? Or is it?
But you can be out in a valley 1 second and no trees, and then you can be in the trees. And I mean, it's mountainous, and it's, you know, and then it's got valleys in it, and it's, they're not deserty, I don't think, no. High desert country is farther south.
Okay, so farm country then. Ranch country.
You ever heard of Tule Lake?
Yeah.
Where they had the Japanese internment camp?
Right.
That's in Modoc County.
I'll be dipped.
And they grow some of the best potatoes there in Tule Lake.
Ooh, I bet they'd be good with some ramps and some Kaneka.
That's your California geography lesson for today.
And I need it, too, because there's a whole lot of California and very little of my knowledge of it. So would they qualify as state of Jefferson types, or does it not extend that far?
Not really. I mean, the state of Jefferson people started in Siskiyou County and spread south.
Okay.
And they're not too big in Shasta County, but they're Trinity County and Glenn County, I think, too. And then they're not too good down in Chico area because there's too many Democrats down that area.
Okay. Okay. Well,
because it's a college town.
Right. Chico is, that is.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Chico State University.
Okay, that's where one of our longest standing subscribers is from. Hey, Tony. Tony and Chico. Well, it's the end of the week, and let's check in and wander over and see what's running through Steve from Georgia Stan's mind. What's happening, Steve?
Hey, Brother Bob, what's going on, man?
You know, I'm here, just, you know, taking my antibiotics and letting the swelling all go down, and I feel a lot better. I feel a lot better this Friday than I did last Friday.
Yeah, I could tell you were a hurting pup last Friday. That's what I was saying. Yeah, just throwing it down, man.
That is an ugly, shitty trip up Pain Mountain. I mean,
Jesus. I've been there, done that. It's awful. Awful. You sell your soul to make it go away.
So with the inflammation going down, now I'm saving up nickels to being able to go to the dentist.
Ballpark $350 out of pocket. Is that still hold true, or is it more than that now?
Yeah, anywhere between $350 and $5.
Yeah, but you'll be glad when it's gone.
Yeah.
Let me rephrase that. 2 weeks after it's gone, you'll be glad. You know?
Right. You know, there'll be the immediate aftermath of warm salt water and letting the... And see, the problem is I have a Novocaine problem because they mix Novocaine with epinephrine to make the Novocaine work better. But the epinephrine makes your heart go... Brrr.
Yeah, you get palpitations, huh?
Well, it's for the same reason I don't drink caffeine or, you know, snort Coke. You know, I don't do stimulants.
Request a gas. That always helps me, you know.
Well, you know, it's hard to get the gas around here because of the...
No kidding.
Because of the known deleterious effects on women of childbearing age. And while I'm not one of those...
That is crazy. In Georgia, it's common. Any dentist that they offer, it's like $50 more, but it's worth it, you know, if you have dental phobia.
Wait, it's a la carte?
Yeah. Here in Georgia, it is. Yeah, your insurance won't cover it, even if you have insurance. It's a la carte.
Who has real dental insurance? There's not, I mean, but the thing is, I had it when I was a kid, because I am dentist phobic.
Yep.
One bad experience as a child with a dentist can change the, and my sister and I are the same way.
Absolutely.
But they discovered a link between nitrous oxide and birth defects, and so they recommend against women of childbearing age being anywhere near the stuff.
And so they just shut it off for everybody. Well, that's ridiculous.
Well, this is after all the state that's cracking down on the opioid crisis by cracking down on people who desperately need opioid pain relief. Yeah, you know, we got us a brand new law where ain't no doctor in the whole wide state of West Virginia can write a script for more than 1 week of opioids. Because everybody might turn into junkies.
I got a stat about that, Bob, and it may step on your toes, and I don't mean to. Do you mind if I put it out there?
No. I doubt if it'll step on my toes.
Okay.
The idea of punishing people who have a legitimate need for these things because other people abuse them is, well, then again,
well, my point is it's going to show how skewed our priorities are. And I've researched this, and my numbers are off the top of my head, so they may be a bit wrong. But the amount of deaths caused by pharmaceutical opiate mishaps per year, about 26,000. Opioids have a medical use. There's no denying that. I mean, people with chronic pain will attest to it. Let's compare that to deaths by nicotine. They're 500,000 a year. So I think our priorities are a bit skewed. And I don't mean to step on your toes. I know you like to smoke, and anybody else that likes to smoke, God bless.
No. You're not stepping on my toes. I don't know why you think you're stepping on my toes.
Okay. It's just an interesting stat, you know, saying everybody's running around with their hair on fire, you know, over this opioid thing. And the cost is about 27 times more for nicotine, medical costs.
Sure.
Than it is for, you know, treating opioid patients. So, I don't know.
No, what I object to is some of the more ignorant responses along the line, and of course they're governmental, along the lines of, you know what, we're going to replace their opioids with plush toys, and they can, like, hug a little stuffed bunny when they're hurting.
or acupuncture, yeah. Tell somebody who's in chronic pain, yeah, go stick 1,000 needles in you. That's going to help you, sure.
So,
and, you know, I don't really have a dog in this hunt because I don't really do either one of them, but still, it's just an interesting statistic. I thought I'd
no,
throw it
well,
out.
See, what I'm getting at is I know that when I, you know, when I've saved up whatever it's going to cost me to go to the dentist, then I know that one of the things that's going to come out of it, you know, years and years and years ago, okay, you'd come out of the dentist and you'd have an extraction or a root canal or, you know, something horrible. And you'd come out with a prescription for a week's worth of, you know, pain meds. And gone is the day. Gone are the days. There ain't going to be any, there's not going to be any prescription when I walk out of there. Well, good luck and Godspeed. And,
take plenty of Advil.
Take you some ibuprofen or something.
They won't even give you a 3-day.
Good luck.
Here it's a 3-day run. They won't even give you a 3-day run.
Wouldn't want you turning into some sort of junkie now while you're laying there writhing in fucking pain. No, good luck to you. Or the other side of that coin, Steve, is that, well, you know, we can't write them a prescription of these things. You know how those hillbillies are. They'll just go and sell them. Yeah, you know, with your jaw swollen out past your freaking ears, you're going to go and sell a handful of, you know, hydrocodone. right.
Well, you're articulate enough to know that anybody that talks to you for 5 minutes knows that you have a modicum of sense about you, and you're not going to go ahead and swallow the damn things like candy just because they're
well,
there.
Thank you for the damning with faint praise, Steve. A modicum of sense. That's, at best, I've got a modicum, so wait a minute.
Well, I didn't mean that as a pejorative. It was a backhanded compliment, believe it or not.
Oh, no, I know. I've been damned with faint praise before. I can spot it from a mile away.
All five knuckles of your backhand were...
Well, you're extremely intelligent. Let me rephrase that. And anybody with a modicum of sense on their end could perceive that you're responsible. That was my point. And I probably
that I'm not going to take them home and crush them up for the refreshing burst of flavor.
Right, exactly. Thank you. Or try to melt them down and do ridiculous things with them.
I don't even want to think about what the ridiculous things you did. No. Meanwhile, Marty, you didn't know this, Marty? Marty just sent an email. He just sent me an internet. No caffeine? Egad, Bob, how are you still awake, alert? He says, I have Delta Dental through my employer, a semi-decent thing about benefits from the University of California.
Mm-hmm. That's who I have.
Yeah, congratulations. Well, they're just about the only game in town out there is Delta Dental.
They pay about half.
Which is one of the it's actually a policy discussion to be had somewhere down the road. If we ever get to the point where we're talking about universal health care coverage of some sort, if we don't put vision and dental in it, we're dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass. Because you can save so much in the way of future health care costs by simply taking care of people's teeth.
Oh yeah, it all starts with and each tooth, if they know how they're numbered, corresponds with a different health ailment. There's a special out called It's in the Mouth or something to that effect. It used to stream on Netflix. Very interesting about how dental care affects your overall health and well-being. So before you pass me on, Bob.
Well, I would never pass you on, but
I tried to tell you last night. Well, I don't mean to sound like I'm lording. I sent you an instant message very gently, and it was from Karen, not from me, saying HBO streams a really good doc called Andre the Giant.
I never even saw that. I don't mean the documentary. Excellent. I mean the message from you.
Yeah, I sent it to you last night. It was from Karen. She said, tell Bob to watch Andre the Giant. You know, we all know wrestling's bullshit. It's not about wrestling. It's about the man and how Shakespearean his life was.
Right. Karen
didn't even cry on air wedding day, and I don't know if that says a lot about me, but this thing had her in tears.
Well, you know, I would take it as a compliment that she didn't cry on your wedding day, okay?
Backhanded compliment, touche.
Yeah, when the bride is uncontrollably sobbing at the prospect of marrying you, it's not a good sign, Steve.
Yeah, understood, comprehended. But yes, I highly recommend Andre the Giant. As crazy as that sounds, because we all know wrestling's bullshit. But you're not watching it for the wrestling. You're watching it for the Shakespearean aspect of the man's life.
I've got another viewing recommendation since we're talking about TV.
Yeah.
How you doing, Bob?
Yeah.
It's a new documentary on Netflix called Wild Wild Country. It's about the Rajneeshi takeover of East Central Oregon in the 1980s.
Oh, the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh.
Yes, that's a fascinating documentary. Yeah, yeah.
And so, the Wild Country.
Wild, wild country, it's called.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, we had an invasion of the Krishnas up in northern West Virginia for a while, and they got kind of homicidal out. But they had great big concrete gold elephants and shit like that up on a hill, up on a ridge line. Weird back reference. You mentioned Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, and
yeah.
I remember cutting an ad one time for a New Year's. New Year's Eve celebration back when I was working in radio in Alabama. And I did it because I've always done the goofy character voices. I did it in the person of someone climbing to the top of a mountain seeking wisdom, or in the alternative, just a good place to go for New Year's Eve, and carries on a conversation with the Bhagwan Ramada.
Oh.
And I did all the voices in it, and it was cute.
Ramada is the hotel, right?
Well, no, the Ramada is, it was the Ramada Inn. It doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
I think the ad may have killed it. But the character was the Bhagwan Ramada sitting in the snow up at the top of the mountain.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, it's fascinating the sort of things that this cult tried to do, in terms of taking over a city, buying up all the property in this one city called Antelope, Oregon, I think it was called. And then they tried to
that's some high desert.
Yeah. They shipped in some, they basically put out an ad like for, homeless people to come and, come to the commune and so forth and live there with them. And so they shipped like 3,500 homeless people in to their facility. And the idea was to register them to vote, to basically, basically take over the county government, in the place where they were located. Because obviously
the Bhagwan was a giant scam artist, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. Yeah, okay. he had all these Rolls Royces and.
And then somewhere along the way, some scam artist, evangelical Christian preachers went, wait a minute, that little fucker in the diaper's got a Rolls Royce? Son of a bitch! Sorry, bad word. And the prosperity gospel was born.
Right.
Yeah. Lord, won't you buy me a Gulfstream 5 jet? My friends all have Cessnas, but I ain't got nothing yet.
There you go. Like what Dollar Creflo or whatever the guy's name
Creflo,
is?
Yeah, Creflo Dollar.
Creflo Dollar. They always get that confused.
Joyce, what's her name? Kenneth Copeland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Okay. But, so you've got agreement. Kelly just sent a note saying Wild Wild Country is very enlightening.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'll check that out over the weekend.
You're
our resident legal scholar. Were you surprised by the scooter pardon today? Do you see? We got Steve, also resident legal scholar, on the other coast, who says, "Nah, it's just virtue signaling to the Count Dicula wing of the party." Whereas I've said, it's the political equivalent of finding the secret message in the Pink Floyd album.
Well, not even that. It's more of a dog whistle, to tell you the truth. It's like, okay, this is
not even a dog whistle. It's a police whistle. It's one everybody can hear.
Yeah, it's a freaking siren.
I think it was a token gesture, if I may interject. He's sending a signal out there to everybody that may be in trouble or is in trouble, saying, look, don't sing or lie, because I'm going to pardon you. You're going to be okay.
Yeah.
That's my take on it.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's okay. I think we're largely saying the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So let me throw one thing your way, Rick.
Okay.
Something that came up on the program last night just by way of wondering and speculating. Would there be anything special, because we got to thinking about the places that Michael Cohen could have hid his dirty business, and off the top of their heads, the FBI said, the hotel he's living in, the apartment that's getting renovated, or his law office. What if he has squirreled away some documents, say, under Donald Trump's mattress in the residence in the White House?
Okay.
How would you go about it? Does the FBI just show up and say, we've got a search warrant for Donald Trump's mattress? And then they're let through?
I mean, I guess technically you probably could. I mean, yeah, president can be subpoenaed.
And yet, and that's the other weird part of all of this. Mueller's just going to let him say, no, I'm not going to sit down and talk to you. And that'll be the end of it?
I don't think so. I think there's going to be a grand jury subpoena issued for his testimony. I mean, it's not a voluntary thing whether you're going to talk to the FBI or not. If you're a witness to a potential crime, you can't, like, volunteer.
Well, that's what kind of threw me out of the NBC News report last night. I was, well, you know, if he doesn't want to give a statement, that's okay. We'll just go away because we're the FBI, and we just go away if you don't want to talk to us.
Yeah, right. No. That's not the way it's supposed to be, you know?
Well, let me ask you this about grand jury process.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Now, we all know the old bromides about how a prosecutor working with a grand jury can indict a ham sandwich, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do grand juries ever get uppity and say, look at Mr. Mueller and say, uh-uh, we haven't been sitting here for all this time just to have the President of the United States tell us to fuck off. You subpoena his ass. You bring him in here. And don't hesitate about it. I don't care what kind of constitutional crisis you have to cause. Cause it. We want his testimony. Get with it.
Does have the ability to request that the prosecutors call certain people in to the grand jury proceeding to be witnesses, or they might, you know, ask, you know, hey, you know, can you guys get more information about this particular thing? So, yeah, they can. It's more, I think, in the way of suggestion, though, than anything else, because, you know, even though in name, okay, nominally grand juries, you know, are the ones who call the shots, you know, as far as, you know, witnesses and, you know, documents to be, you know, subpoenaed. But as a practical matter, the prosecutor really, you know, they're looked to.
Right. The prosecutor drives the process.
Yeah. The prosecutor drives the process. They're the professional. The grand jury looks to them for guidance and so forth, you know. And they set the agenda to a large extent. Grand jurors can ask questions, you know, what typically happens in a grand jury is the prosecutor will start out with a whole bunch of questions they ask a witness. And then after the prosecutor's done asking the questions, they say, do any of the grand jurors have any questions? And so the grand jurors can start asking questions. And, you know, sometimes they ask some very good questions that, you know, that I hadn't thought of, you know, that the prosecutor hadn't thought of. And, you know, they bring a different perspective to the, you know, to the room, let's just say. So, you know, that can be, you know, very interesting. You know, you can also get some kind of off, you know, strange questions, you know, but.
Has the president ever been abducted by a UFO? Has he been anally probed? That's what this grand jury wants to find out about. You mean that kind of stuff?
Well, yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Stuff that's like, you know, totally irrelevant, you know.
but seriously, could the grand jury look at Mueller and say, no, he doesn't get to tell you to fuck off. We're the grand jury, and we want to hear from him.
Well, I mean, I think the grand jury, yeah, they probably could say, look, we really want to hear from this witness. Do they have the power to bind the prosecutor? I mean, I don't know. I think the prosecution can still tell him to F off, politely, obviously. It's a little unclear because obviously the grand jury is the body that does the investigation, that makes the charges and so forth. But the charges and the investigation are brought to the grand jury by a prosecutor. Okay, so
yeah.
I don't know that would happen. You know, that the grand jury would, I mean, they could obviously ask the prosecutor, hey, let's have Donnie Deadbeat here testify. You know, we want to hear from him, you know. You know, chances are the prosecutor would try to accommodate what the grand jury, obviously. Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Bob.
Who hey Bob me?
That was Scott.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
Okay. Don't we have a precedent that was set in collecting of evidence against the president back in 1972 and 73?
Well, not just 72 and 73, Scott, but in fact, Kellyanne Conway's very own husband established the precedent that the president of the United States can be subpoenaed to give a deposition in a civil proceeding. So if he can give a deposition in a civil proceeding, there's certain, and combined with the Nixon rulings, yes, you're absolutely right.
Right. So we, you know, if Cohen has hidden things under the bed in the White House, they can be asked for.
You would think, yes.
And I would think that it would be against the law to refuse.
You would, but then it becomes a matter of enforcing it.
Yeah, he does have a whole bunch of Marines around him, doesn't he?
With guns.
Yeah.
Big guns. Do they still have the machine gun nests up on top of the White House?
Yeah, probably.
I know they did, and then they had some satellite flyovers, and there were some pictures of the White House, and you could see them up there, and then all of a sudden there were no more pictures of the White House available online. Those were the early days of NASA and satellite photography and, you know, checking it all out, you know, Google Earth and all that. Suddenly all of those went away.
Yeah, funny how that happened, huh?
So anyway, I wanted to call and give some exciting news for me. Rick is always calling in and talking about how he's doing so much fun stuff and going and seeing people, then they're going to die.
Wait a minute. Okay, go ahead.
By the way, by the way, speaking of dying, Kid Rock is coming to San Bernardino August 26th. So I'm gonna do a fundraiser to get Rick to that show.
Chip in and give Rick tickets.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going tomorrow night up to Kennedy Space Center to watch the Atlas V go off.
Oh, cool.
I'm about 8 miles away. That's until you get like super passes. The closest you can get is 5 miles, and I can get about 8 miles away, right across the river from the launch site, and so I can sit there, and I will feel the launch from there.
Yes.
I will take pictures and post them up for everybody to see.
Oh, do please.
But I haven't been able to get up there to see a launch. I've been down here for almost 10 years. I haven't been able to see a launch. I've been up there a bunch of times, and the launches were always scrubbed. And so I'm going to go try again tomorrow night. It's a 7:30 launch about this time of night. And they have a two-hour launch window, and the weather is supposed to be spectacular. So, yay, might actually get to see it.
Is that at Cape Canaveral, or where is that?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Canaveral Air Force Station, but it's all one big giant complex.
SpaceX stuff that's being launched now there?
Yeah, this is United Launch Alliance.
Okay.
There's two, SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, two different companies, but they all share the same habitat.
Yeah, they share the old base, I guess, the cave.
Yeah, they've got. We have. I go up that way quite a bit. It's only 20 miles from my house, and so even when I don't go to see the launches, I see all the launches.
Okay, that must be pretty cool.
I sit on my back porch and watch the rockets go.
Yeah. Neat.
Used to watch shuttles come back in too. That was fun.
Oh yeah. Well, they used to land also out at Vandenberg here on the West Coast. So, you know, that was quite a thing watching them come down. And, you know, I mean, they come down at such a great velocity. It's amazing that they can land them without crashing, you know?
Right. Yeah. You have a double sonic boom.
You weren't watching the Challenger launch, were you, Rick?
No. I when that happened, I was working at UCLA Student Loan Collections. While I was going to law school, I was working there part time, and then we got the news that afternoon about the crash, so, or the explosion, I should say. Yeah, that was a sad day. But no, I didn't watch that live. No, I didn't. No.
We had when the Challenger was going off. I had wired up the entire building for video and audio, and we had TVs in every office and build a room, and had audio running over the PA system to do the launch, because it was a big deal. A whole bunch of people we knew that had worked on several aspects of it, and it flew up. So we had.
Well, just got a note from Lee in New York's subject line, seeing a launch. The odd thing for the viewer is that because sound is so much slower than light, the launch is actually silent. And then you hear it about a half a minute behind. That's right. Got to be cool. Daggummit. You know, I'm part of that. You
yeah,
know,
when the launches go off here, the sound takes about 3 minutes to get to me. So it's funny, because the first time that happened, I didn't associate it with the launch. I just heard this rumbling, you know, thing. Is like, what is that? We got a jet going over? What is it? And all of a sudden it dawned on me. Oh, that's the rocket. Because the thing, it was long gone, out of sight, you know, 2 minutes of launch and they're in orbit. You know, I don't hear the launch here until they're already in orbit.
Yeah, I'd love to see something like that someday. I really, really
would.
Come
on down.
Happens all the time, yeah.
Yeah, we do. We have, I think we've got like 14 launches or something scheduled this year.
Meanwhile, a second challenge has entered in with the challenge that Steve in New York put on the table. That he will throw in another $15 if a brand new, never before contributed person responds to the remaining $15 of his challenge. With that on the table and waiting, Steve and Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy have decided to put up a second challenge, trying to get a fire lit, so that we don't, it would. There's $20 on the table if somebody will please match that. So there's $35 in challenges remaining on the table. That would go a long way toward finishing off. Because, see, the thing is, we did all our fundraising last week for this week, and we pulled up like 400 and something dollars short, and then it went down to 360 or 380 or something like that. And we have spent all week long here trying to knock down $360 worth of fundraising over the course of 5 days. I don't remember anything like that in the recent history of keeping this program on the air. And Jesus, I can't tell you how much I despise talking about it. I'd hoped we'd be done with it by now. But, you know, there was $174 to raise. John met $10 of the challenge from Steve, and that's where it stopped. So there's $15 remaining on Steve's challenge. It will be doubled if it's a new contributor. And then there's a $20 challenge on the table, courtesy of Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very, very kindly. I wanted to get that out there because we're closing in on the third hour of the program. And maybe folks think that I'm just gone and there nobody's listening right now. But I mean, been here all week.
Yeah, to tell you the truth, Bob, I just found out that you were on the air this week, and I went to write White Rose and saw, like, oh, there's programs for this whole week. I said, what the hell? Bob was supposed to be in D.C.
Yeah.
So it could be that people just aren't tuning in, you know, because they figure, oh, Bob's off.
Yeah, and Bob is off. I mean, I'm off and off, you know, bubble off plum, but I'm not away from the microphone.
No, I know that. No.
But the idea of going all week long trying to raise $300 plus, and then having a deficit on Moran Monday just fills me with you know, it gets kind of sweaty. It gets a little worrisome after a while. So that's where that is. And I hope we don't end the program that way. But I hoped we didn't end the program Thursday, Wednesday, Tuesday, and Monday that way, and we did. So it's hard to know. So you know, that's where all that is. So anybody. Anything just setting your world on fire right now? I mean, I've got my own little stack here, but I try not to impose my will upon the Friday conversation, if you know what I mean.
Well, I read an interesting article in Esquire, I guess. It's called All the Ways Trump Can Shut Down the Mueller Probe, and it's by Jack Holmes, April 11th. And basically the idea here is for Mueller, it's a race against time. And there's three ways, according to this article, that he could shut down the Mueller probe or try to. He could fire Deputy AG Rosenstein. Okay. He could replace, he could basically get rid of Jeff Sessions as the Attorney General. Or he could fire Mueller directly.
Well, that's the one because that was asserted by Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags a few days ago. Mm-hmm. Can he fire Mueller directly?
I think he has to rely on others. Like that's why Nixon went through like an attorney general and a deputy attorney general, and then he got to a solicitor general, and Bork said, oh, sure, I'll fire, you know, Archibald Cox, no problem. You know, the special prosecutor at the time. But what they're saying is that the third option of Trump firing Mueller is the least likely, that it's more likely that he would either fire Rosenstein or Sessions, and then basically put someone in like a friendly, like a Scott Pruitt, who would then you know, either fire Mueller himself or just, you know, say, look, your investigation's over, Bob. Good job, you know. You know, that kind of thing. And then the question becomes, if Rosenstein gets fired, who would replace him? And it could be the acting associate attorney general, or it could be the solicitor general, or it could even be a... it's this other guy, this guy by the name of Ed O'Callaghan. Apparently he's a, what is he? He's the acting principal associate deputy attorney general. and so, you know, this article also says that the investigation wouldn't stop just because Mueller is gone. But then it talks about the pardons. And I think that's where today's news basically, you know, comes into play about, you know, Scooter Libby. I mean, the whole idea there is that you're, you know, basically saying, look, if you play ball, if you're on my team, you know, you'll get out of it in the end, you know, because I can pardon you. And I think that was a clear sign to others, you know, to those who have been loyal to remain loyal and keep their mouth shut, not tell the feds anything, you know? So that's probably what Manafort is banking on, a pardon, is my guess. That's probably why he hasn't pled.
Yeah, because he's just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. His wild card is a pardon, you know? So.
And there's and this takes us back to another one of those nerdy 1L students drunk on a Friday night questions. Can the use of the pardon power be an obstruction of justice?
I think so. If it's not obstruction of justice, it clearly could be an impeachable offense, I believe. Even though he has the this power constitutionally to pardon, if he uses it with a corrupt purpose, then that would be a high crime or misdemeanor, as far as I'm concerned, from a political standpoint, because impeachment's really a political charge, not really criminal justice as such.
Well, hello.
Yeah, hey, Larry.
I just wanted to say hello to everybody. I hope everybody's doing fine. I'll try to come in the next hour if I get back. Got computer issues and other things going on here, so I hope everybody has a nice evening, and I appreciate you, and I hope you're all doing okay, okay?
All right. Well, thanks, Larry.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Hello?
Yeah, hello?
It's Steve.
I heard New York-sounding background noises. I thought that was you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm interested in listening to this. Let me ask a question. Does Rosenstein have to be confirmed? I mean, does that position have to be confirmed?
I think it does.
Yes.
Uh-huh. You know what? It suddenly occurs to me, here's a really interesting scenario. Trump waits until the election in November. The Democrats take control. They go out of session to end this Congress, and he makes a recess appointment in Rosenstein's position, and that person then fires Mueller before the Democrats can even act on any report that Mueller might give, and then he can pardon whoever he wants to pardon. Maybe that's a little out there, but that doesn't seem too far-fetched to me.
Well, among other things, Lee just jumped in and said, Trump cannot fire Mueller. The special prosecutor reports to the AG. Sessions' recusal means that Mueller reports to the deputy AG. He'll be managed by the highest appropriate person at DOJ. That's how it arrived at Bork's choice under Nixon. Because Nixon had to drill down till he got all the way down to the bottom of the barrel and the Solicitor General in Bork. So
the whole thing I think there's a lot of stuff going on in the Attorney General's office in New York, because that's the thing about all these people is there's a clear nexus, legal term, to all these crimes in New York, because they all took place here.
You're talking the state attorney general, that you're talking about Schneiderman's office, right?
Okay. Schneiderman. I think that's the wild card. I think Trump's too dumb to know this, and I don't. I suspect nobody explained that to him because they know he's too dumb to even understand it. And he probably thinks that if they're charged under state law, which I'm beginning to think that, I don't know this is the case, but I suspect, unless there's been something to the contrary, that Cohen is being investigated under state law. And I think what's going to happen is they're going to pressure Cohen to flip, and they're going to pressure him to flip on state charges and on him losing his law license.
Well, I think that Cohen's days as an attorney are numbered anyway, Steve. I think even he's not going to be practicing law within the next couple of years is my prediction.
I think it won't be within the next couple of months.
Maybe less.
I have to say something that a lot of people think I'm nuts for saying this. But I think the unsung hero here is going to end up being Sessions. Because I think Trump, as stupid as he is, didn't understand. First of all, he didn't understand that Sessions isn't his lawyer. Second of all, when Sessions did what he did, he basically inoculated Mueller from that. And I think what has happened is Sessions, in all of the belittling comments that Trump has made towards him and embarrassed him publicly, I think that's one of the reasons we haven't heard from Sessions, is that
Sessions is just sitting by the river and waiting for the body of his enemy to float by.
That's what I think.
Well, let me go back to one. Why do you think he's not going to be practicing law? He hasn't. What has he done? He didn't screw his client.
We're talking about Cohen, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think he's not going to be practicing law because he's probably going to have some, money laundering charges, maybe wire fraud, possibly extortion. I mean, there's all sorts of shit.
I'm not conversant with those, with those statutes, but
yeah.
The dodgy business about paying, he arguably violated the rule against loaning money to your client,
right?
With the payoff to Stormy Daniels, saying that he did that all on his own,
right?
But he had to have known that too. Isn't that just him throwing himself on his sword?
Well, I think that, there are cases in New York where people have been disbarred for acting unprofessionally. The way you treat an adversary, the way you treat other people who aren't lawyers, even the way you treat other lawyers. I don't think there's any question that he'll lose his license.
How about the way you treat non-lawyers? Like the Daily Beast reporter that he said, you move very fucking carefully about what you ask, because I'm gonna fuck you. It's going to be disgusting what I do to you.
Right. Absolutely. Now, I'm not saying it happens all the time, but that would be grounds to do it. And he's so politically unpopular, as is Trump, that I don't think anyone would bat an eyelash and people would find any reason to get rid of him.
That's all. Language like that, Bob, is very close to the line of a criminal threat, if not crossing the line into that violation, Talking to people like that.
Yeah, I mean, when you know this too, Bob, and I'm sure you know this too, Rick, that when you get admitted to practice, you consent to having your First Amendment rights curtailed to a certain extent.
Yeah, because you can't call the judge.
Listen here, asshole.
Yeah. You can't call the judge something that sometimes judges richly deserve to be called.
Yeah.
Like, you, no kidding, I really mean this, Nazi, you. You collector of Nazi memorabilia, you.
No Judgy McJug face.
No, none of that. Well, there's another little bit of interesting information about Cohen that's coming out from McClatchy this afternoon. Remember the Steele dossier? And, remember how Comey says that Trump asked him, four or five times about the Steele dossier and particularly the PP tape?
Yeah.
And, the Republicans keep saying, the corrupt Steele dossier, whatever. And we keep finding out that there's stuff in the Steele dossier that's real. More and more of it gets proven to be true because Christopher Steele was actually quite good at his job. Well, in the Steele dossier, there's an allegation that Michael Cohen, in Prague, met with a prominent Russian crony of Putin's.
Mm-hmm.
McClatchy now has two sources saying that, in fact, Cohen did take a trip in the summer of 2016 to Prague. Now, they haven't connected the last dot all the way to Konstantin Kosachev, the chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee in Putin's pet legislature. But they've got him in Prague in 2016, just like the Steele dossier says.
Let me ask a question. Does anybody honestly think that that thing is not at least 90% correct?
Oh, I think it's something approaching 100%. It's very.
Yeah, I do too.
I think the PP tape is real. And the fact that Comey says that he used melanoma as an excuse, I wouldn't want her to think that there was even a 1% chance that it was true.
Right, who does that if it's not true? Who would even, that would never even enter your mind.
Right, you know, well, dipshit, the fact of the matter is you bragged about what a sexual sleazebag you were all through the 90s. You cheated on every wife you've had. She's bound to have something more than a 1% guess that it might be true. And then there's, you know, there's the question of what has he asked her to do? Because remember, she became a famous top model by taking sketchy, high-end lesbian porn shots for men, for European men's magazines. Remember?
I have to award you a cowbell for the phrase high-end lesbian porn shots.
Well, I mean, she would only do high-end porn. She's a high-end... Well,
it had to be a money shot.
And then there's that weird-ass picture with the strange shadows that make her look like she... Because it looks like she's taking a pee. She's just standing there with her legs spread and just... And the shadow, she's either taking a pee or she's got a tail. I never dreamed when we started this program back in October of 2005 in its present incarnation that we would ever be talking about whether, you know, about the high-end lesbian porn shots in which the First Lady of the United States had participated. I never dreamt it. I mean,
and participating in golden showers, that whole thing, you know.
Well, now let's be careful there, Rick, because we want to stay factual within the Steele dossier. The Steele dossier says that Donnie paid and then watched at a distance while Russian prostitutes peed on the bed where Michelle and Barack Obama slept. And so when people say that's what gives the other side ammunition. You know, Donnie participated in golden shower. No, Donnie doesn't want to be peed on.
He watched the golden showers, let's just say.
He wanted to engage in some racist revenge porn. Mm, and that's the way we should talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what it was.
I don't think I don't think it's racist revenge porn. I think, and I'm not saying that I don't think he's racist, but I don't think that was the case here. I think, and it's been demonstrated in the way he's approached every single thing he's done, is everything's all about erasing and denigrating anything Obama did. So, you know, I think it has
right,
less
but
to
but
do
Steve,
with...
Steve, I think it's racially motivated because. The whole birther conspiracy that he really got up and running on all eight cylinders was racially driven.
Fair enough.
So, you know, fruit of the poisonous tree, if you will, or the pissy, right. or the pissy tree.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is I have to admit, it's like I almost think racism almost takes some amount of thought. And I just can't attribute anything beyond like impulses for anything he does. There's no thought. It's
autonomic. It's like breathing.
Pavlovian. Yeah, it's like breathing to him. There's no thought.
He was raised by a racist. He was surrounded by racism, and therefore racist is what he is.
Right. It's like, you know, not to give kind of a completely a different example. It's like, you know, I've met many people who are some of the kindest, most Christian people in the world who are atheists, because somewhere in their DNA, they don't even have to think about kindness and all that kind of stuff. And I think maybe that's not such a good example, but I think you have some people like that who that's just the way they are.
Yeah, well, down that road, Steve, you know, I've long said that people who are going to be good are going to be good people absent any religious structure. You know, it's possible that religion keeps somebody from being a mass murderer once in a while. But for the most part, there's not a lot of people who, if they were atheists, would be horrible, shitty human beings, but by the grace of Jesus Christ have been made good by their participation in a faith system.
Fair enough.
And, I mean, I'm not getting all Wednesday night on you or anything.
By the way, did you get that? I sent you a video about Wednesday night.
Refresh my...
It was. I don't even know how I found it. It was something like these people saying that there are demons running America, and they used George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton, and it had, you know, the whole Illuminati. And
Yeah. No, that was like a greatest hits clip.
Oh, I was like, wow.
You can find that in practically any evangelical church.
Right. No, I get you.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure you can find it around here. I do have a compelling question coming from Marty for you guys, though, Billable Rick and Steve. What happens to attorney-client privilege after if a lawyer is disbarred?
It survives.
It remains.
Yeah,
that's what
I thought, because the privilege belongs to the client, not to the lawyer.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if a client dies, then the privilege dies with the client. If a client dies, the privilege dies, so that there is no privilege to anything that would have been privileged had the person been alive.
So wait. That's interesting, because let's say, you know, Steve Jobs is dead. And let's say somebody comes along and says, hey, we think Steve Jobs conspired to have a little kid knocked off so he could get his liver in Memphis. If his lawyer had knowledge along those lines, the lawyer could not plead privilege.
I've got to check you there, Steve. Attorney-client privilege does survive the death of the client.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking, like, yeah, no, I think I'm wrong there. But I think there may be some nuances depending upon the state.
Well, there was a Supreme Court case a decade ago called Swidler in Berlin versus something here. I just Googled it. let's see here. Let me see what that decision said. It's taken forever here on my computer for some reason. Yeah, let's see here.
By the way, where are you hanging out this evening, Steve?
Oh, I'm just at the subway station. Nowhere fun.
Oh, okay.
Nowhere fun.
It almost sounded... well, it had a Grand Central Station sound about it.
Well, I mean, it's called the Lower Manhattan. I guess what the hell is this called? Fulton Center is what it's called. So.
Oh, you are way downtown.
I'm right across from the World Trade Center. It's like there's a bunch of shops and shit in here, and almost every train on the, pretty much every train comes into this hub.
How far are you from the Fulton Street Fish Market?
Oh, that's way over on the east side.
Oh, okay, okay. You're on the west side of Lower Man. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm on right off Broadway. Broadway. And Fulton Street.
Oh.
Okay.
I miss the city. I do. I got spoiled that week.
Well, it misses you.
Yeah, there's probably that guy up there by the Morgan saying, "When's Bob Kincaid coming back?"
Yeah. Hey, here's the decision, okay? In Swidler and Berlin versus United States, it was a 1998 decision. It arose out of the Whitewater inquiry involving President Clinton's firing of White House travel office employees. And apparently Vince Foster, who was then the deputy White House counsel, had sought legal advice from a James Hamilton, who was a private practice attorney. And then 9 days after consulting with Hamilton, Foster committed suicide. Ken Starr then caused a grand jury to issue a subpoena for the attorney's handwritten notes with Foster. And the court basically denied the request, ruled that the attorney-client privilege survived Foster's death, and thus Hamilton's notes did not have to be produced. And the court's ruling was based on a review of the common law interpreted by the courts in light of reason and experience as provided by the federal rules of evidence. And the court noted that nearly every state acknowledges the survival of the privilege after the death of the client, with exceptions generally limited to disclosures necessary to carry out the intent of the client regarding settlement of his or her estate.
Right. Okay.
Okay, so that's...
But, you know, I will tell you this. There's a really weird rule in New York called the dead man statute, which ranks right up there with the rule against perpetuities in the sense that nobody freaking understands what it actually says.
Okay.
But it has something to do with things that people say...
In contemplation of death?
Yeah, it's I don't quite understand it. But it's something like that.
Well, sounds like something to get all nerdy and law student-y about over the weekend. What fun.
Yeah, right.
I'm just not, I'm so, sometimes I get in these moods, and Rick, I know Rick can relate, where you get so engrossed and engulfed in stuff that time off, the last thing you want to do is read anything.
Yeah, but by the same token, there's a reason that lawyering arises out of the priesthood, because the clerical class of the medieval church would agonize over a preposition, and nothing has changed in terms of lawyering. I completely get. I mean, Every now and then, these things just... I haven't been, near the law for 2 decades. But every now and then, the things just come bubbling up out of the swamp. And I find myself going, "Son of a bitch, the statute of frauds! Oh my God, Mortmain!" And it's like the time never passed at all. Hey, I've got some good news. We don't have any new contributors, but Steve, your challenge has been met.
Okay.
And Steve from Georgistan, tonight is the night of challenging Steve's. It has been met. I had a lovely note from Brian. He said, I want to donate in the name of my dad, Ronald, who passed this past September 13th. He was a great Democrat and a great union business agent for the local union. He helped to start and worked hard for the men and women he represented. Thank you so much, Brian, and thank you so... obviously, your dad did not only a good job starting a union local, but raising a son. Thank you, Brian. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks go out to Thomas, who said, ha ha, have a ramp up in funding. Ha, ramp up. Get it? I was talking about ramps earlier. You guys. And so thank you to Charlene for helping out and knocking down a chunk of it. And thanks to Charlie in Tennistan. All of this means that we're getting very, very close to... thank you to Gary. Let's see. Now. We are $24 away from finishing fundraising for the week and for the evening. $24. So thanks, everybody. Thank you very much. By the way, a note coming in from Lee in New York, another connection to all things New York. The Fulton Fish Market was forced out of South Street Seaport. They went to Hunts Point in the Bronx. Oh, I did.
I have a client there. Oh, let me ask. I wanted to ask you something, Bob.
Yeah.
On a food porn note, are you a acolyte of the Diners Drive? What's it? Diners, Dives, and Drive-Ins,
or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I've seen it from time to time, and in fact, I've been in a couple of the dives, and they've got pretty good taste in dives, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. Well, I was at a friend of mine referred a client to me. He is an auto parts, not an auto parts store, but like a auto dealer, small auto dealership. He does a lot of repair work. And I was up there the other day, and he was showing me around, and he had a picture of Guy Fieri. And I remember going to the front desk and saying, you know, I remember there was a place up here in the Bronx. I don't remember where it was, but they had a barbecue place attached to the auto repair shop. Come to find out that was the place who is now my new client. And he told me that was the first, they said it was the first episode of Guy Fieri's show that profiled that place.
I'll be darned. The one I'm familiar with is the Tune In up on Capitol Hill on Pennsylvania Avenue in D.C. That's a venerable old watering hole, and they got great food. When they do crab cakes, you can't get through the door, and it's just a little tiny place. But an auto mechanic shop with a barbecue attached to it.
Yep.
I'd go there for barbecue in a heartbeat.
It was. He had to shut it down. We talked a little bit about. He wants to try to get it going again at some point, but he told me he had no training in cooking or anything. That he actually said, and it's funny how he said it to me. He says, you know, I actually had a dream about it, and in my dream I knew how I wanted my sauce and everything to taste, and I kept experimenting until I got it to taste like that.
Well, that's the stuff that barbecue joints are made of. The most famous rib joint in Alabama, Dreamland, came from a prayer that the founder made. He was a concrete finisher, and anybody who's ever even done that for 15 seconds knows that it is a hateful, hard business. And the way the story goes, Big Daddy one day said, Lord, don't let me spend the rest of my life on my knees. And out of that was born Dreamland on Jug Factory Road. And I got way back in the 80s, you know, I met Big Daddy. And he made it a point not to park his Mercedes-Benz, the great big old S-Class sedan, in front of the joint. And you didn't see him very often because he was back cooking anyway. So you wouldn't see the great big ass Rolex Oyster President, you know, in 24 karat gold on his wrist either. But his prayer had been answered and had been answered and would press down and shaken together. And the franchise of Dreamland, like in Mobile and Atlanta and places like that, Birmingham, you know, take it or leave it. But the original location in Tuscaloosa ain't nothing like it on Earth.
You know what? You said barbecue in Tuscaloosa. That really rolls off the tongue.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know, the Crimson Tide uniforms are close enough to Scarlet that you could probably get in and out of Tuscaloosa, Steve, as long as you didn't open your mouth and let them hear the way you talk. And you could probably get some of them ribs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I had to say one more thing, Bob. By the way, I just want to say you and I were very much on the same page on the NCAA final. I was just so sad to see Michigan get its ass handed to it.
Oh, I imagine you wept more than I did.
Oh, just sad.
You know who was crying? And Steve from Georgia Stan will recognize this. I am sure that Guy James had to watch that game with a bucket to catch his tears, because nobody hates to see Michigan get destroyed like Guy James hates to see, you know. I know you're a Buckeye, Steve, but you're a little baby Buckeye compared to Guy James. I mean,
oh, yeah, you told me about him. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He gets up every morning and spits on a map of Michigan.
And he probably doesn't even say the word Michigan.
Oh, I think his toilet is probably painted in maize and blue.
What is that noise, by the way?
I think that's Charlie.
Okay.
Hey, Charlie.
Bob, do you reckon that Trump is getting ready to just come unglued? He's acting like a scared little kid now, and he's a narcissist. So, you know, the narcissist is, you know, they have to run on their self-esteem, and it looks like he's losing his self-esteem. And I'm not too sure if it would be a bad thing if he did pardon him.
What? Pardon himself? Well, I mean, he can't.
Is just to what kind of a person Trump is.
He can't pardon himself.
Well, he could try. I know he constitutionally can't do it, but, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
He could say that he is. And, of course, I don't know if there'd be anybody to challenge it legally if he tried.
Oh, it would be challenged. It would fall to a member of the judiciary to sort it out and determine it. But the thing is, he's not going to come complete. I mean, this is a guy, Charlie, and this is not by way of praising him. Don't get me wrong in that regard. This is a guy who has been through how many bankruptcies? And oh, so yeah. he's pretty much got a fairly thick skin around any kind of humiliation that might have come. How many people bankrupt a casino? And I don't mean the guy who's counting cards, definitely counting cards. No, how many casino owners bankrupt their casino? Nobody in business has any respect for him. The only people who respect him are people who think they can get something out of him. And for him, that's enough.
Well, I think there's a lot of ignorant people that have a lot of respect for him. I mean, the woods are full of them over in Hendersonville, just right down the street from where I live. I probably live about a mile and a half away from Trinity Music City, and that's where the Mike Huckabee show is filmed. And
oh, God, you know, yeah, you do, don't you? Well, that's speaking of Tennessee. I don't know if you saw her, but there was a young woman named Brenna Spencer, and you know she put it out there for all the world to see her name, and it looks like maybe she's in Knoxville. She's somewhere that there's a river. Maybe she's in Nash Vegas. Maybe that's the Cumberland River. I don't know, but she's standing in front of a river. She's wearing a hot pink Women for Trump T-shirt and a pair of painted-on white jeans. And the reason I mention how tight the jeans are is because she's got a semi-automatic pistol stuffed in them with the clip end of the pistol on the grip right to the immediate right of her navel, and she's holding her shirt up to show the gun off, and she says, "I don't take normal college graduation photos." And so she's, you know, she's proud that, and, you know, for once, yeah, if they'd like to do something useful, you know, I'm surprised that Dana Lush and Coleon Noir and Wayne the Peter didn't at least take a moment out of their busy schedules to go, somebody go tell that young woman how to properly concealed carry. Because if that thing goes off, she's going to shoot herself in the vagina.
Well, I tell you what, Bob, the women down here are starting to carry weapons, and I've got a 38 snub, an SP-101 stainless Ruger, and I've got a Ruger target pistol. It's a 22 bull barrel, and I've got a 30-30 lever action Winchester rifle. But if I live in a society where I'm going to have to carry those guns around with me to feel safe, then I need to move. I have no interest.
Well, oh,
yeah, in
right, or maybe have a little heart to heart with you and Jesus about how many enemies you've been running around making.
I mean, if I have to live in a country where I've got to have a weapon to make me feel safe, then I'm in the wrong country. And I have no interest in carrying a gun on me. I just have no interest in it.
Oh! By the way, you just mentioned something here, and I don't want to make anybody mad at me, so I promised I would get the story out there. You know, I've been getting emails from our buddy Carol out in Vegas, and yeah. Carol wrote to me earlier today. Carol thinks that I'm going light on the black people, because I never talk about gangbanging or black people who commit crimes with guns. So, earlier today, I got a note from Carol saying, "Well, I gave it a few days to see when you would talk about a deadly shooting with an assault rifle in Rockford, Illinois, last Saturday, where on a bus a killer murdered 3 unarmed people. With all the hand-wringing about guns, I can't understand how you missed Raheem King's murderous rampage. What could possibly be the reason for not mentioning this horrible mass murder?" Well, quite frankly, there's so many goddamn mass murders and so many shootings in this country that I can't keep up with them. And nobody else can either. But apparently, Carol is out there keeping a close watch on gun crimes committed by black people, because Carol is convinced that that black people are by far a horrible, horrible part of the whatever. So I told Carol that I would make sure and mention Raheem King, who took an assault rifle on a party bus in Rockford, Illinois, and shot 3 people who were on that party bus, and then went on the lam and was eventually arrested and will be prosecuted for his crimes. And my best goes out to the prosecution team. Now, Carol's got a big thing about gang banging. I don't know if Raheem King was a gang banger. But you know, maybe Carol can sort that out for us. But
Bob, that's almost akin to, I don't mean to put anybody down, but whenever you start grouping people together because of the color of their skin, that's almost like saying that human beings are the what am I trying to say? What's that word that that animals, like a certain bird, will build a certain type nest and all that?
Instincts? People, they're driven by instincts?
Imprint.
Imprint, yeah.
That's almost like saying that human beings imprint because of the color of their skin, and I don't think that's true. Everybody's different.
Well, no, Carol thinks that, I don't know, that I've joined the new Black Panther Party or something, and that I'm blind to crimes committed by people of color. I'm not.
White people commit crimes. People of color commit crimes.
Well, the fact of the matter remains that the vast majority of things like theater shootings, school shootings, grocery store parking lot shootings, university shootings, high school shootings, middle school shootings, I mean, by a majority that is tremendous, that's white folks. It is.
Yeah, I just, you know, that to me, I understand what she's saying is basically
he. Carol is a he.
Oh, what he's saying, I'm sorry. What he's saying is basically what the what went on in 1933 Germany or whatnot. You know, if you were Jewish, then you imprinted into whatever behavior that Jewish people have, and so all the Jews behave the same, and you know, that's crap. it doesn't make good sense.
Well, I mean, if I behaved like all the Baptists behave, I'd have to go into the liquor store through the back door.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was just easy.
I don't know.
Arthur responded with the subject line gangbanger and said, "Of course he's a gangbanger, Bob. He has a black Arabi sounding name." And then says, "I think Carol's a right winger." No, Carol's not a right winger. That's the funny thing. Carol's never voted. I don't think Carol's ever voted for a Republican in his life. But, we all have our things, you know.
Hasn't Carol been on the front porch before, at least called into the show, Bob?
Oh, Carol's called in. We've had lovely conversations.
Yeah.
But he declared a while back that I've become almost unlistenable because I keep giving all these gun-toting black people that are shooting up America a pass. Lee in New York, subject line, Raheem King and an AR-15. Thank you, Carol, for highlighting this mass shooting. Another mass shooting with an AR-15. When will we stop allowing war machines in the hands of the civilians? There's that point, too. And that's the bottom line. Not who's white and who's black. But when will we do something about all the millions of semi-automatic assault rifles that are already on the streets and in the hands of gangbangers like Raheem King, or all the white folks who shoot up schools and stuff? And I guess that's kind of what gets under my skin a little bit, is that when you say, "Oh, but you're not talking about the Negroes and their guns," you know, it's all part of a larger universe. Black folks didn't start the Civil War. White folks with guns did. Black folks didn't commit a genocide of the indigenous native population. White folks did. Black folks didn't institute Jim Crow or suppress the rights of black people to vote. White folks did that. I mean, January 20th, 2009, every president of the United States was white folks. So that means white folks fucked it up. To the extent that things were fucked up, it was fucked up by white folks. And does the whiteness have anything to do with the fucked upness? No. But if you have to talk about skin color in order to talk about gun violence, then sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. So, I mean, that's where, but I did promise Carol that I would bring it out that Raheem King committed a murder of three people on a party bus in Rockford, Illinois with an AR-15. And as I said, my very best wishes go out to the prosecution team. I don't support capital punishment, but here's hoping Raheem King, if he is fully and fairly tried before a jury of his peers and found guilty, it goes away pretty much forever. So, you know, that's where that is. By the way, Steve in New York tells me that Skype crashed on him. He said, I'm going to listen to the program from here on out, give my best to everyone. Thank you, Steve, and thank you for participating this evening. About 18 minutes before the program ends, 18 minutes before the hour, $24 remains in fundraising to finish off this week so that next week we got 6 days of fundraising and then 5 days of fundraising free radio. So I'll cross my fingers. Thank you,
Bob.
Thank you, everybody, for kicking in. No, go ahead, Steve. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I did not mean to step on you. I'm terrible about that.
No, you're not. No, I'm terrible.
I just got a concern, and I would like everybody to weigh in on it. Maybe my tinfoil hat is just wrapped simply too tight. You know, Comey's having a big interview with Stephanopoulos Sunday on ABC. It's not a plug. It is.
No. George Snuffleupagus will fuck it up. I have no doubt whatsoever.
Well, my concern is, does anybody think Trump's going to do something stupid in Syria before then as a diversion?
They're already
talking about it on MSNBC. He might do something tonight, and he's having an argument with his generals on what they should do. He wants to do more than they want to do.
See, and I'm not even watching.
Oh, shit, Sparky, that's scary. What, he wants to, what does he want to nuke Damascus?
No, I guess he wants to launch more missiles than they want to launch.
And Russia has their back. This whole thing could get ugly really quick.
Or maybe the targeting. I mean, he wants them to hit certain targets and they don't want to hit them.
Well, I mean, the thing is, you know, any strike at this point against Syria is basically meaningless because, you know, the rebels have lost the war. Okay? It's just a mop-up operation is what it is now. So, you know, unless he wants to take out, Assad himself, you know, there's really not much point in just launching, you know, another, you know, 58, Tomahawk missiles or whatever the hell he decides to launch, you know.
But in Trump's twisted mind, he needs diversion, something he can break on national TV, you know, kind of like.
Well, so, it's something that'll get the maggots all, excited.
Round up.
And
right.
Yeah. Look over there. Hey, Marveline, get our Chinese-made MAGA hats out. He's ascending missiles against the Syriacs.
Mm-hmm.
He's on the TV perpetrating for freedom.
Wait. Stop. Perpetrating for freedom, folks. If that isn't cowbell-worthy, nothing is.
Well, I didn't know if it was a legitimate concern or just me being paranoid. And I have not been watching MSNBC, so I don't know what they're saying on that. And it's just my head and twisted overdrive right now.
Well, they're talking about he's getting ready to go over the top. They're saying he's more concerned about the Cohen investigation than he is the Mueller investigation. That's what they're saying.
Well, with good and with good reason.
Am I wrong, or aren't the only assets remaining in Syria, aren't they Russian?
Pretty much. Well, I mean,
the Syrian has it. Syrians.
Isn't Russia kind of like, you know, isn't that their presence in the Middle East?
Well, yeah, but the Syrians have an air force too, but they've dug in the air force and they've already moved all their planes and parked them in with the Russian planes.
So what is Herr Trump going to bomb?
Nobody knows.
Well, what did he cruise missile the last time? He put some holes in a runway.
And then they were back flying off of it again in a few days.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was repaired like within a day, and they were flying again.
You know, maybe figure out where they're making the chemical weapons.
What was the strike he pulled with the mother of all bombs there?
And of course, we're all the way through the looking glass now. And back to the days when there's no TASS in Pravda and no Pravda in TASS. I don't know if you caught this or not, but the Russians claimed earlier today that Great Britain perpetrated the gas attack in Syria. To which the British responded, "Fawfaw, I've never heard such a thing. Of all the, my stars and God and my gracious sakes, that is utterly ridiculous." You know, which it is. But, yeah, they... Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Steve just, he's not in the conversation anymore, but via email, he said, "Because Cohen has the goods, the attorney-client privilege doesn't apply to crimes and no pardons. This might actually be scary for Trump." And that's, you know, that's what the New York Times was reporting earlier today, that Trump is now, and I kind of alluded to this earlier this week. When Mueller handed off the Cohen stuff to the FBI office in New York and to the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, he handed off jurisdiction. And that also brings Attorney General Schneiderman into it. And those are all things that, you know, that is something, Schneiderman in particular, that is beyond the reach, as we said earlier, of Trump's pardon power. And while, for instance, the Manhattan District Attorney, what is his name, Cyrus Vance Jr., got a big old whopping campaign contribution, and then curiously, and there was no connection whatsoever, later decided to not pursue criminal charges against Ivanka. Well, Elliot Schneiderman, if I understand correctly, has the jurisdiction to supersede the Manhattan DA in terms of the prosecution of New York crimes. Now, maybe I've got that wrong.
You would think so.
But there's reason for Trump to be as nervous as a dog, shaking like a dog trying to pass a peach pit.
So Bob, let me see if I have this right. Is that a joint federal and state like task force, the raid of Cohen's office?
No, that was strictly FBI.
Okay, well, in that instance, I don't think they've handed it off to the state authorities at this point then.
No, but they've moved the jurisdiction into New York.
Yeah, right. But you'd still have to, you know, Schneiderman would get involved if there were state crimes that were, you know, that were being investigated.
Right.
I mean, it's not uncommon to have joint, you know, state and federal task forces for organized crime.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that could be going on.
And so, you know, all the skeevy business with Trump Soho.
Mm-hmm.
Those took place, I mean, jurisdictionally, those took place in New York, not Washington.
Right. And it's not related to the, collusion between, you know, the Trump campaign and Russia.
This just came across the AP wire that tonight, Geezer Disgustus will speak to the nation amid anticipation of a retaliatory strike for Syrian chemical weapon attack. Mm. So, Jesus. That crazy little bastard's involved our poor country in something. Oh, now, wait a minute. Wait. We're running out of time, but I got it. This is... This does not touch on anything we've been talking about. Total non sequitur. But you can't just leave this out. This is disgusting. So, teachers in Kentucky have gone on strike. And they stayed out of the class. They stayed out of the classroom today. If I'm reading this tweet correctly, Marcus Green, who is a reporter for WDRB News, by way of the Louisville Courier Journal and News and Tribune, tweeted the following. Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin on the teacher rallies today. They stayed out of the classroom to go and rally in the Capitol. I guarantee you somewhere in Kentucky today a child was sexually assaulted that was left at home because there was nobody there to watch them. We deal with a lot of disgusting stuff on this program. Unfortunately, that's way up the list of disgusting things that Republicans have said at any given point in time. He blamed a hypothetical sexual assault on the fact that teachers rallied today in Kentucky for more funding for their young scholar charges and their schools. I guess it goes without saying that Matt Bevin holds himself out as quite the Christian. He's the one who tried to pray the violence away in, what, Louisville? And that's just revolting. There's no decency in them. And one can only hope that the teachers respond forcefully. And by the way, with 6 minutes remaining in the program, and both challenges having been met, a note coming in from Keith. Call it done. The last $24 is on the way, and it just landed. So that is tremendous, and that is huge. And I thank everybody who helped us get to where we were going, and finish this week off, so that we wouldn't have a deficit when Moran Monday rolls around on the 16th. Thank you very kindly, Keith. Let's see. Jim says on goodness. Let me see if I... remade on CNN to Trump's lies power. Hooey boy. Not quite sure I get that. I might be missing a word here and there, but okay. And so that's, Jim says, and you, hey, you never mentioned my good wishes to Atlanta, Bob. Okay, I have now. Thanks, Jim. One last thing on the way out the door. In regard to the Scooter Libby stuff, it was, you know, Valerie Plame, and Valerie Plame was married, is married to former Ambassador Joe Wilson. And Joe Wilson didn't take the pardon particularly well. Joe Wilson said, interviewed by CNN, or no, I'm sorry, MSNBC, they reached out and got him on air. Katie Turr asked Joe Wilson, he campaigned on Iraq being a bad idea. Do you think that the advisors he has in place right now are going to change his mind on that sort of thing, or he's going to change their mind on that sort of thing? To which Joe Wilson replied, I don't think he actually has a mind. I think he's basically very venal. He's looking to get himself through the next day and put as many fucking dollars, as many dollars into his bank account as he possibly can. I think this man is a danger to the United States of America. He then said, I apologize for the profanity, but these are serious times. Ambassador Joe Wilson dropped the F-bomb on MSNBC. He was so head up about this. And it would do well if...
I heard it.
Really? And so it made it through the delay and everything, Sparky?
Yes. If you make it out, he said, fucking...
Well, I'm not... You know, I hope the precious little cheering will I hope... Because, you know, I'm sure some Republican somewhere is worrying about what we'll tell the children. So I guess that pretty much wraps things up this evening. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Sparky. Next time you talk to folks up in MODOK, tell them we all miss Grady in the background, okay?
I will.
And thank you very kindly for participating this evening, Steve and Charlie and Scott and Larry and Billable Rick and Steve from Georgia Stan. Thanks for the challenges, Steve and Steve. Thanks to everybody who responded to them. Thanks for taking a load off of my mind. I'm very serious about that. Thank you very, very kindly. And, you know, more and Monday will be here before we know it. Might do a little... We'll be back down with lows in the 30s by the middle of the week, so I'm going to make barbecue while the sun shines this weekend. Maybe Agnes and I will have some ribs or something like that, but I'm looking forward to it. Anyway, y'all have a wonderful weekend. Thanks, as ever, to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little program. Thank you to all of you who keep this little program on the air. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for HeadOn.live. Thanks, John Fox, White Rose down in Australia working on HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.